So I wanted to just thank Jomo for proposing this problem in the very beginning, but he's not here to receive the thanks. But I think I should say it anyways. So this was due to him, and in particular, this like kind of this talk will really be saying like going over many many things I've been working on, kind of as a subset of my PhD here. So hopefully, you know, you guys can hear a little bit about like how the story has like developed. So we'll start the story basically from the beginning. So in 2000, oh, this is probably too small. So in 2019, Del Mastro, Diego Del Mastro, and Joma, they looked at basically the symmetries of abelian transcendence. So this is the first part of the talk, and in particular, the types of symmetries they focus on are for these transcendence theories, where the action, you can write it as, well, say, Lagrangian, ADA, and they classified basically all the symmetries of these theories, so they gave a classification. Unitary. So, in particular, so one thing to notice is that so Chern-Simons theory is a very interesting topological theory, but the symmetries here need not be necessarily a symmetry, say, of the action, but we do want the symmetry to preserve word identities. So for a series of n operators by act of the symmetry, I want this to be equal to, I want this to preserve the word identities. So in particular, in this paper, they looked at kind of the quantum symmetries. So the quantum. Are of this form. And what they also, and so preserving the word identities, it's sufficient to say that these quantum symmetries act as, is this too low or too small for people? Okay, so they act as, or act in general, as permutations of anions that preserve the categorical data. So I can say that preserve. So in particular, associated to this theory, I should say that you have a set of anions. So alpha is a set of anions. And alpha takes values in 0, 1, k. It's even. And 2k if k is odd. So another way to think about these anions is you get these basically as the Wilson loop of the gauge field. And there's another piece of data that I need to give you for that's necessary to classify abelian transcendence, and this is the topological spin associated with the anion. H alpha is alpha squared root of 2k. So in general, these modular tensor categories have even more data than what I just explained. But it is sufficient for the abelian case to just look at the set of anions and basically the spins here. So there might be people looking for us, Sabrina. So thanks.
They're really letting kick us out.
So anyways, maybe if I talk fast enough, they won't.
Oh my god. Okay.
So anyways, right. In general,
can you switch into the bottom, please? Can you switch into the bottom?
for this talk, I'll focus on and so time reversal symmetry is like, so what does time reversal do? It'll act on E0. And of course, it reverses the path that you integrate this one on. And in general, this, so this is of the type where, since it's not a symmetry of the Lagrangian, you can make this into an automorphism. On the set of anions, what this does is basically you take the time reversal acting on the anion here, and you get the complex conjugation here, and sufficient to basically just look at H alpha congruent to H minus alpha among them. So what they did in this paper was that they looked at kind of all the theories that have a time reversal symmetry. So they give a classification.
Sorry, what's written on the right hand side?
It's the value of this object mod 1.
Mod
1. So the classification basically, so if you have a U1 trim Simons for K such that you can solve this equation Kp minus Q squared is equal to 1 for some integer integers P and Q, then it emits a time reversal. So for this talk in particular, I'll just focus on the case of K equals 5. But Joma asked a question, so maybe I'll write it here. Actually, before I tell you the question that Joma asked, I need to say a few more things about this. So they discover the following, which is that this time reversal symmetry has an interesting algebra structure. So in particular, T squared is equal to C is the algebra of time reversal for those U1 that basically solve the equation. And an interesting fact is that you see, this algebra structure actually only exists when K is odd. So now, what they notice is that if K is odd, then U1 level K is a spin theory. So if you like, it's a spin MTC. And spin MTCs, basically, so this is why you double the number of anions, because you have a fermion that's in the spectrum. And if it's a spin theory, you have your favorite minus 1 to the F symmetry. And in particular, one question that they had in this paper was that actually, if you looked at this type of time reversal algebra, you couldn't tell the difference between this and this one, because minus 1 to the F doesn't act on the anion lines. So to summarize, they basically found that this is an algebra that works. However, this is also something that could potentially work. So now I can ask you, so Joma asks, for U1 level k with t squared equals minus 1 to the f symmetry, what is the value of that anomaly? And in particular, you know, U1 level k is kind of nice. And for this talk, I'll look at the case of k equals 5. So this has to do basically with the new is equal to 1 over 5 factoring quantum Hall effect. And so this is kind of an interesting thing that Joma cared about because, you know, he's a very physically minded person. We care about physics a little bit. So knowing the anomalies for the symmetry may tell you about some sort of anomaly that exists in this physical system. So therefore, you know, if you can really go into these theories and kind of look for, you know, if the anomaly is present, then perhaps you can kind of build an experiment and actually like measure this object or like measure this anomaly. I talked to some people about this, and it seems as if, you know, actually building an experiment and measuring the Thomas Russell anomaly is really difficult. But nevertheless, I'm going to say that there's some experimental thing that you can maybe get out of this. So for the rest of the talk, great. So now we have a question. And so for the rest of the talk, I'm basically just going to tell you how we solve this question. So outline for the rest of the talk, I'm going to basically give the classification of the anomaly. And what this amounts to doing, so what I'm going to tell you is the symmetry structure. Associated to t squared is equal to minus 1 to f. So what a symmetry structure is basically it's basically a structure on manifolds. So what this is saying is that if you have some theory with a time reversal symmetry, time reversal is something that acts on space and makes your theory unoriented. And so basically this unoriented structure needs to play with the fact that I'm in a fermionic theory, which always has to be spin. So I'm basically mixing spin and time reversal, which is kind of an unorientation. And I need to tell you what types of manifolds you can kind of about that can support this anomaly, and it has an interesting symmetry structure, which I'll tell you about. And then it becomes a question of computing some relevant borders and groups. And these borders and groups really they're really associated to some invertible field theory. Topological field theory, and this is where the anomaly lives. So it's so the next part of the talk is going to be great. So now, if I can classify the anomaly, I know what type of group this anomaly is in, but I want to actually evaluate the number. In particular, for U1 over 5. And so then that basically answers Joma's question. And then for the last part, I'm going to tell you another way of evaluating the anomaly. And this last part of evaluating the anomaly is really, I'll say, writing down the partition function. manifold that generates the Bortles group. So the way I'm going to solve this problem is basically using something called the Thiele-Hertzsprung spectral sequence. And I'm just going to kind of basically eliminate all the obstructions one by one. This is kind of a specific thing that you have to do for U1 level 5 theories. Doing this is a lot more powerful because actually here you could just take the contents of a U1 level K theory, put it on the manifold, because this manifold will kind of classify all theories with the right symmetry structure. Then you could just basically evaluate by plugging in tensor category data. It could be for any U1 level K with time reversal symmetry. The hard part about doing this is that you actually need the manifold generator. So I hope to tell you a little bit about how we got this manifold generator and how we use the Smith homomorphism to do that. So before I go anymore, are there any questions?
And I want to encourage the young grad students to ask like any question you want to right now, like so we can go through the setup.
Maybe could you explain how some groups are related to the anomalies?
Okay, great. So the theory itself is, some 2+1 dimensional Chern-Simons theory. And the point is that the anomaly is classified by an invertible theory one dimension higher. So this Bortism group is some sort of Bortism group of some symmetry type, in particular in dimension 4. And it's a theorem of Fried-Hopkins that basically says that this thing is related to the deformation classes of these invertible TFTs. So it's really classifying all the SPTs basically one dimension higher. So I'll say a little bit more about the definition of the Bortism group a little bit later when we get to it. Any more questions?
Questions get more cookie.
What is the connection between the Wilson formulated group
out there and the So the way you get all the anions is by, you can think of like anions as objects of the category, or if you take it in terms of like the action, right? The action itself has these gauge fields, and you can ask yourself, how do I write kind of operators of the theory? And the operators of the theory are the Wilson loops, and they're associated to the anions, basically. And then this is a question of basically representation theory.
So it's theta t alpha. Theta star.
Yeah, so it's kind of a
reality.
Yeah, exactly. But time reversal is anti-unitary, so therefore it's up to conjugation.
Okay.
Because, yeah.
So is there a physical explanation of a quality t squared equals just understand the physics?
So t squared is equal to c. So you can think of it as kind of Maybe an easier thing for me to say is that, time reversal is something where kind of you start with space, right? You have like one direction, you pick an orientation, and then time reversal is saying you take that and you switch it to the opposite orientation, right? Well, what happens is that, let's suppose instead of C, I put -1 to the F here, right? So this is saying that kind of going forwards and rotating backwards is the same as basically, like a rotation. So this is saying that kind of, instead of like, when you kind of reflect and reflect again, so you go back, instead of getting rotation, you get like charge conjugations of the anions. But what charge conjugation does, it'll act on an anion and take it to minus alpha mod, I guess 2k. So the symmetry type. So the symmetry type is the eta that I wrote on the other board. So I'm going to start with Rn. I'm going to define En to be the group Z4 semi-direct product on SON.
Okay.
because Rn has a natural action by Son. The Z4 is an action on the space on the group that acts on space-time. This is given your time reversal. So let me first take care of the cases of t squared is equal to c. So this is a Z4 action. And then once we understand this this E group, I'll upgrade it a little bit more. So we'll lift it to t squared is equal to minus 1 to the x of c. But it's good to start from here. So given this, I have a map here to Z4. I have a map here to DL1. Which is Z2. I have a map from here to here. So this map here is projection on Z2. So this map here is to On. And this map here is the determinant map. So in particular, this is a pullback square, which means for a space that maps into here, it's equivalent to the data of the Z4 bundle, along with the orientation structure, such that the restriction on Z2 are the same. So to make this a little bit more precise, I need to remind you about a couple facts. So reminder, recall, the group cohomology, Z4, it's generated by two elements. So given a map, from Z4 to Z2, I get a line bundle on, so I get on BZ4 for classical. Sigma over BZ4. And now the point is that I will let X of P and Y of P inside the cohomology of my space X with that two coefficients be the pullbacks. Of these two things, I would say two cohomology. And then, so then a structure on this one is equivalent to a structure basically, so I have these two things pulled back on my space from the cohomology here. And then I also have this this line bundle over BZ4. So I have a map, so I have a bundle of P over X, and I have, let's say, a map from X to BZ4, I have a map sigma. So I call this F, then basically what I'm saying is that I want to let X. So in particular, what this is saying is that this is twisting the orientation by some classes here. So the twisted orientation says that W1 of my manifold is equal to X of P. So great. So this is what basically gives you the E structure. So E structures are manifolds such that the first default winding class of the manifold is equal to XP of this principal Z4 bundle that's over X. So given E, I can write another set of maps from N plus minus. I'll call this E and N. And I have a map here. So the map going in this direction, or I guess you can say the map going in the opposite direction, is basically lifting orientation to spin, or just kind of giving the double cover here. So this is also another pullback map, and a composition of pullback maps is another pullback map, which means that a map into here is sufficient data of a Z4 bundle along with the pin plus or minus structure. So this gives the twisted orientation, and a pin plus or minus structure, let me just choose pin plus, says that W1 of X is equal to 0, and you see you get pin minus for free, because W1 squared is X squared, but X squared is pulled back from there and X is 0. So W1 squared plus W2 squared is also equal to 0. So you get pin plus and pin minus. So, great. now, this is really, so dpin is the symmetry type. We are after. And dpin manifolds, this is the condition on dpin manifolds. So the goal is basically to evaluate something called dpin in V4. But it's a little bit easier to think about dpin as basically from this pullback diagram. You see, what I said here was that this E structure is a twisted version of orientation. This is a twisted version of basically spin. So I can say that actually this thing is really a spin vortism in degree 4 of the space DZ4, because you have this bundle, but it's twisted by this line bundle sigma that I pulled back from the map from Z4 to Z2. So this is an object that you can compute, so it's computable via the atom's spectral sequence, but it's actually simple enough to also compute, so you can also compute with the Tierhertz book. So I'll do both computations for you. The first one's going to be really fast. So running the atom spectral sequence means basically finding A1 modules and then taking X to that. So never mind what this all means, but if you compute the atom spectral sequence, what you get is you get this picture that looks like this. So this is telling you something. This is evaluating cobordism groups in degree 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. We're after this guy. So each one of these dots is a Z2, is a group of order 2, so it's a Z2. A line is an extension between two things. So you can see in degree 4, the atom spectral sequence tells you that the anomaly is a group of order 4. But there's something sneaky going on, which is that that what the atom spectral sequence doesn't give you is any possible extensions that you can have. So it's a group of order 4, but you don't know if it's Z2 times Z2 over Z4. So this is part of the classification problem, which is that like it's a difficult question to ask whether the anomaly is Z2 times Z2 valued or is it Z4 valued. So just an interesting fact, and this is probably the only reason why I drew this atom spectral sequence, which is that if there is an extension, this manifold up here is a famous manifold. So this is K3. It's also the generator of spin vortism in degree 4. It says that if you have a manifold down here and there is an extension, it means that basically this manifold times 2 is equal or is bordered to the K3 surface. So right. So maybe I should define what these things are. So in general, this thing in degree whatever classifies diffeomorphism classes, say M, of type manifolds in dimension N modulo those in dimension n plus 1 with kind of the boundary of this, the boundary of M plus one. So basically, it's basically saying that these are classes of manifolds in dimension n, but you take two manifolds and you identify them if they could be written as the boundary of a n plus one dimensional manifold with the same symmetry type. So anyways, this is basically a theory of manifolds. So what you have is that you want to find this guy, and if you find this guy and the extension does exist, then two times this guy, so two times what this manifold is, where the two really means M disjoint union with M, you find a cobordism, or you find a bordism to
could you explain slower how to read this diagram?
So what this diagram gives you is basically first you take basically the cohomology of this Thom space. You write the cohomology of this Thom space. And then from the cohomology, you work out the A1 modules on this one. You take x of the A1 modules, and then the x functor applied to the A1 modules gives this diagram. And what this diagram says is basically there are points, and each point is a group of order 2, so there's Z2s. And these lines are saying that there's an extension from here to here. And these lines are saying that there's an extension of Z2 groups. So if you take two Z2 groups and extend them, you got like a Z4. So if you have three lines, it would be like Z2, Z2, Z2. You extend like twice, and you get Z8, basically. So these lines are telling you about extensions that exist. So in particular here, what you have a Z2 extended by Z2. So you have a Z4, and then you have a free Z2 in degree 2. And then here, I'm saying that you don't know if there's an extension here. Because the spectral sequence only gives you the associated graded, you have to work out, is this Z2 times Z2, or is this actually like secretly connected?
So it's degree, maybe you want to add a label just for people who can hear this degree versus?
This is just like, this is you don't have to worry too much about this. This is like the Adams filtration.
Okay.
But this is the degree of the manifold. So the next goal of this talk is to work out the extension.
Sorry, by A1, you mean the Stingrod algebra?
Yes, so A is the Stingrod algebra. So A1 is a sub of the Stingrod algebra generated on SQ1 and
SQ2. Okay.
Can you define the degree of the manifold for those who don't do
it too much? Oh, sorry. It's really the dimension of the manifold, sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
It's the dimension of the manifold. So the way I'm going to resolve this extension is with the Smith homology. So just as a fact, there exists the following long exact sequence. So you take some bordism group in degree k. You can take some symmetry structure. Let me just write a bunch of things, and then I'll explain what they are. So in general, you have the following thing. You consider some space X with two bundles, two vector bundles B and W over X. So from this, you can construct this thing called a Thom space. And now what you do is you construct something called the sphere bundle of this other vector bundle over X. You pull back, you pull back this thing along the map that gives you the sphere bundle over X, and then this is called the Smith homomorphism, which now says, okay, you tap this, you have this Tom space X, and now you upgrade to this other Tom space, but now you take the two vector bundles and you direct some of them. What this does is it lowers the dimension of the manifold that you're in by the rank of the thing that you Smith with. Another way of saying this is basically this is something about k-dimensional manifolds. And really going in this direction is somehow finding like a Poincaré dual to, well, to this previous class W. So anyways, this long exact sequence like just exists. You can take it, you know, you can take my word for it. And now the point is that to resolve this extension, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna try to take this and basically fit it into our problem. So there's a way to fit into this problem. So let me take X to be BZ4, which was the space over there. Let W be equal to sigma, and let V just be trivial. In this case, I will start in degree 5. So the C over here is spin. And I have, well, I need to evaluate the sphere bundle over sigma. Degree 5 of spin. So as a fact about this thing, so what is this thing? If you have a map, BZ4 to BZ2, so this map gives you a line bundle, which I call sigma. Now what you want to do is you want to take the sphere bundle associated to sigma. You can pull this back from the bundle BZ2, which is a contractible space. So basically pulling something back from the contractible space just amounts to taking the homotopy fibers of this map. And this one is just a BZ2. Coming from taking the classifying map of the short exact sequence Z2 to Z4 to Z2. So this space you know is BZ2. And this is a great thing because these things are actually very easy to evaluate. These are just things that people have, you know, evaluated for a long time, and we know the values of these things. So you have a 0 mapping into this thing. This is a Z4 mapping into something we don't know. And then this one over here is just a Z. You know, whatever. So in particular, so let's call this map alpha and beta. But this beta map is actually trivial because we know that this group is some torsion group of order 4. There's no maps here, so this is the 0 map, which means that alpha is actually an isomorphism. Just by using exactness. So we get sigma spin, 3, 4, BZ, or sigma, is equal to Z4, which means that there is indeed an extension here. And the anomalies for any theory with this type of time reversal symmetry is basically some number mod 4. This is also telling us something, which is that there's only one manifold to look for, which is kind of nice. So much for the classification, but now I want to actually resolve the number inside. So I mentioned there's a second way of computing this thing, which is using the Tia Hilbert spectral sequence. So let me just do that computation for you really fast. And what we'll see is basically you're still going to get an extension question, but now I've broken up this thing into kind of its constituent pieces. So I will do the same thing, except I will instead evaluate cobordism. So it works as follows. So cobordism is this degree minus one. So we want to look at the things in total degree four. So in total degree four, so this is minus one. So it's five. So this one, this one, this one, and this one. But there are differentials in this Tia-Hertzberg spectral sequence. You didn't see any differentials actually in the Adams spectral sequence. So a nice thing about doing these kinds of computations is that sometimes doing it from both sides actually kind of helps you. So one thing that happens here is that there's a differential here, which is D2. This D2 is just SQ2. So what it does is it acts by squaring y, and it acts trivially on you because this thing was twisted by a degree one class. This map over here, D3, is Bakhshtin composed with SQ2. When Bakhshtin is associated to this following sequence. And this map is an isomorphism because H4 of E. So this gives you an isomorphism, which means this class dies, this class, this class dies. So what you only get, so you find, so there is a guy in degree one and a guy in degree three. So these two are both Z2s. So we get the same answer as we did in the Adams computation. And we don't know what the extension is. Well, we do know what the extension is now, but you couldn't a priori have seen it here. You just know that the group that you get is a group of order four again. But this tells us something, which is that really these anomalies are coming from two types of things that obstruct certain properties of the symmetry. So let me tell you what these things actually do, and then we can basically show that all these obstructions vanish. Showing that the obstruction vanishes is enough to say that the anomaly is actually trivial. The H1 cohomology class is measuring an obstruction in the following. We had some action from Z4, and I said that it was an action on basically the anions of our theory. What I want to do is an obstruction to basically lifting this action to another action of Z4. But now I want this theory to be kind of an A tilde. So what is this? What is this A tilde? A tilde is a I'll call it a minimal non-degenerate extension of A. And in particular, it is bosonic. So the minimal non-degenerateness is like saying that I extend this theory with some number of anions, this at 10 anions, This is a theory with more anions. However, the non-degeneracy property is like saying that the only visible ones are basically, or the only visible anions here, with respect to the anions here, are just the vacuum ones. So in that sense, it's minimal. You could have always embedded this thing into some like super large theory, but then like you might have tons of things that are invisible to anions here. So we want something like that's kind of minimal. There's something interesting, which is that a minimal modular extension, I can really call this kind of labeled by nu, where nu is equal to 1 through, or I guess 0 through 15, which is that minimal modular extensions, if they exist, there's 16 choices. There's a Z16 choice kind of choice for how to actually extend this. But the fact that they exist was proven by Theo and David Reuter. So show that an extension always exists. So we just need to find an extension that's basically compatible with how the symmetry acted here.
Can you tell me an example of an A and an A twiddle? Do I know A twiddles, or are they really complicated?
So I will give you an example of one that actually extends this one for U1 level 5. But in general, you can always embed kind of a like a fusion category into its center. But the center has many visible objects that you don't they may not have seen in A. And the point is that that's not. So I will give you, so it was shown that for U1 level K, such an A tilde is equivalent to U1 level 4K. So in particular, U1 level 5 is a minimal extension of this one. Now, there's a problem, which is that this has central charge 1. So what does this say? It says that if you have central charge 1, it means it doesn't come with a time reversal symmetry. But I wanted something that not only extended the anion data, I wanted something that extended the symmetry structure. So this is not the right thing to do. However, there is something that you can do. So you can apply a procedure called zesting. This one. And what zesting does is it's a way of modifying fusion rules. And in general, and can change the C by kind of 1/2. So there's a way to take this theory, you zest the fusion rules, aka you kind of modify the fusion rules a little bit, you get some new theory, and this new theory has C equals 0, then it's a matter of property to show that this new theory you get has a compatible time reversal symmetry. So another way of saying what this does in categorical language is that it really like modifies the Witt class of this A tilde.
Just to be clear, you're looking at minimal non-degenerate extensions up to Witt equivalents.
So these are the ones up to Witt equivalents. But this one's gonna fall a bit outside, right? Because not only do I want an extension, but I need this property.
Right.
So I will zest it a little bit to extend this. Zesting is really an interesting procedure because it's not topological, right? Because it really changes the central target.
Yeah, I don't really understand zesting. But
exactly.
Before you zest,
is zesting
like
a
Oh yeah, it's called zesting. The reason why it's called zesting is because you want to add flavor to the fusion rules.
Okay.
So
everyone's about to just be like, what?
Sorry, it's the A tilde nu is considered up to Witt equivalents.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I'm asking.
Because right. So what am I saying here? So here's something that you know, which is that you can have kind of basically Witt equivalents of supervector spaces, and these are given by the spin, like kind of the spin n level 1 theories, right? But n is something that you can take basically kind of 1 through 16, right? In the sense that those give you like kind of all the same. Yeah, exactly. It's a 16-fold way.
Sorry, a very simple question.
Isn't A for U1 of the level K just Heisenberg algebra as an algebra?
U1 level K?
Yeah.
So yeah, the fusion rules just work by basically you take two things, you add them, right? And then you take it mod 2K.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, for me, it's just free boson as stress energy tensor is just stress energy tensor for free boson.
Well, the stress energy tensor of U1 level K Trent Simons is trivial, right? Because it's a topological theory. Are you might be thinking of the WCW?
Yeah, it's not.
Sorry?
It is not WCW.
No, I'm thinking of the bulk of the WCW.
Okay.
Ah, okay. It's 2 plus 1D.
So I should not think that ZC central charge of the boundary conformal theory.
Ah, so there is a way of defining the C for Trent Simons theories, and it's by you see this topological spin that you defined was this theta term, right? But the theta term was related to H. This H something, and this H is related to basically the conformal weights on the boundary side. So this is basically the thing going on with that one. So you can, yeah. So it's really the exponential of something like this.
Yeah, yeah.
So great. Let me tell you what the zested theory is. So the zested theory. Is kind of a Z2 times Z10 to the objects A and B are kind of taking values A is equal to 0 or 1, B is equal to 0 9. So the fusion rules work exactly the same as the Abelian theory, basically. So you just add add component-wise, and you take it mod 2 and mod 10. So this has time-reversal symmetry. And what it does is it takes A and B, and it maps it to A 3 times B. So why is this kind of compatible with the original time-reversal symmetry? So the original time-reversal symmetry acted as follows. It took an anion, this alpha inside U1 level 5, and it maps it to Q times alpha. So let me just say that what I wanted before was something that satisfied Kp minus Q squared is equal to 1, and I wanted, so K was 5, P is whatever, and Q is, you know, whatever, but I need Q to be relatively prime to 2K. So 2 would work, but 2 and 10 are not relatively prime, so the next guy you choose is 3. And then 2 times 5 is 10 minus 9 is 1. So therefore, something that works here is 3 times this. You can show that basically this is a compatible structure with the initial time-reversal symmetry. So excellent. We found an extension of the symmetry here, which means that this H1 obstruction vanishes. So we literally do this like by hand, basically, using some other mathematical methods. And now what's left to do is to resolve the third. So the H3 is an obstruction to extending the symmetry fractionalization. So what is the symmetry fractionalization? Basically, it's like saying the following. You have, say, suppose you have surfaces like this. So these are surfaces that in principle implement a G action, or sorry, like a G and an H of the symmetry action, which was some Z4 thing. And the point is that these are really objects associated to the zero form symmetry because they're codimension 1 in 3 dimensions. So you can take, so you can take an anion A, and you can ask kind of, is there a natural isomorphism? Between basically acting kind of one before the other to acting with those two together. So you can kind of ask what happens if I take A and go from the top, and then I just act with A going from the bottom with the two. And in general, what can happen is that there's an element here, which I'll call alpha for an anion. And the principle, and the point is that alpha is an invertible object. So what this is saying is that the difference between acting with these two things versus the versus acting with just these two together is in general some U1 phase. So there is a natural iso, which I'll call eta A associated to GH. So it's a U1 phase. And basically, this is the natural isomorphism, so it's kind of a U1 value thing.
Can you repeat what the systems we have in the elements are?
So, G and H are like something implementing the action of Z4. So, you know, in general, like if you take some surface operator, right, and you pass some object charge under the symmetry through it, it acts by some element of like Z4 on it. So I'm just saying take two elements and then you can act those, or you can act like with those, you kind of, you know, take the composite and act like together. And there's a natural isomorphism between the two actions. It's given by basically some U1 phase.
So what G is doing to the A is like the...
Yeah, exactly. So you have, so basically it's kind of A with G acting on it, with H acting on it, to GH, like acting on A.
And the
action
is given by the permutation of the
thing, or is that? Right. So, exactly. So the action is given by the permutation. But these are just, you know, these are just arbitrary elements inside. So the point is that you can associate these U1 phases to basically any type of anion inside your original theory. And you can, and basically I'll just tell you what this is. This is given by exponential of G plus H minus mod 4 times anion A. So this gives you a formula for these symmetry factorizations. And the question is, can you write basically a compatible thing for this theory over here? So it turns out that yes, you can. You can look at how different anions will fractionalize under the same symmetry. And it's basically just looking at how these things transform under, if you were to act with kind of one surface and another surface versus the two together. So without going into too much details, I'll just say that you can extend symmetry factorization to Z2 times Z10. So being able to do that means that actually the H3 class also vanishes. So this is telling you something. This is telling you that inside the group Z4, the anomaly is actually taking like value 0. So that's a bit of a bummer. It would be nice to discover some non-trivial value of the anomaly. But I guess the answer is 0. So for the last part of the talk, oh, I'm already over time.
Yeah, like I think if I can remember this.
Okay, so for the last part of the talk, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the manifold that generates this Borg group. So you have the answer, but now the question is, can you check the answer through like another means? And this is through the anomaly indicator. But for that, I need to tell you the manifold. And once you get the manifold and you write the partition function on the manifold by kind of chopping the manifold up, and then reassembling it through the gluing relations, you will also get the same answer of 0. So what this does is it's a very nice check that like this thing kind of worked, but also it's kind of a nice sanity in terms of like the mathematics that the manifold you found was correct. So what is the manifold that generates omega 4 to 10? It is the following thing. This manifold is basically a Klein bottle bundle. So this is a Klein bottle. It's a Klein bottle bundle over S2. But even more than that, manifolds in here always have a Z4 bundle. So with some Z4 bundle. So how do you find the proper Z4 bundle to consider? Well, from this vibration sequence, you have another sequence, or you have another long Z sequence in homotopy groups. So this, of course, is 0. This is equal to Z. This is Z semi-direct Z. And the point is that since this is 0, this map is surjective. So actually, it just suffices to tell you how the two generators, A and B, give a Z4 bundle. So what am I saying? I'm saying that basically, the Z4 bundle on here, you see, so to give a Z4 bundle, it's sufficient to give maps from the fundamental group into Z4. And what I'm saying is that to get a Z4 bundle on here, it's sufficient to look for Z4 bundles on here. So to look for Z4 bundles on here, all I need to tell you how to do is map A and B into elements of Z4. So in particular, I can take A is equal to 1 and B is equal to 2. And this actually satisfies the correct relations for a Klein bottle. Namely that if you look at the Klein bottle, what you do is you kind of go around town. So you get A, B, A inverse is equal to B inverse. And doing this is basically finding a bundle over, it's basically finding a Z4 bundle over the Klein bottle. So great. So it is this manifold with alpha mapping to 1 and beta mapping to 2. So how do you check that? Well, you check it by really evaluating kind of the cohomology classes of n and making sure that w1 of n is equal to x of the Z4 bundle and w2 of n is equal to 0. So this is like, once you have this candidate, it becomes like you know, this NP complete problem that it's actually very easy to check this. So the question is, how do you actually build this weird manifold? And basically you build this weird manifold by using another series of Smith homomorphisms. But let me just give you some inspiration using the one that we already knew. And this is probably all I'm gonna have really time for. So I'll just give you the inspiration of how this works. Which is that, recall that we had so this guy was 0. So we said that this one was a Z4, and this is Z4. So let's consider what the manifold generator for this one is. And I said that to get a manifold generator for this one, it's sufficient to basically just look at the Poincaré dual of sigma inside this five-dimensional manifold. So the manifold that generates this, it's basically a Lens space bundle. It's given by L3, 4, saying that this is equal to the three-sphere quotient in Z4 over two-sphere. So I'll sometimes call that Q4. So you can compute the cohomologies of this guy. And this is the right thing that generates these types of manifolds. So now the question is, what is the thing that generates this one? You could take inspiration from kind of lower dimensional topology, where these things are like very well understood. You can ask yourself, kind of, what is EPIN 2 of, what is the generator of EPIN 2? Well, it turns out that one of them is the Klein bottle, right? So an EPIN structure emits a map into PIN plus and PIN minus, and Klein bottles are manifolds that have both a PIN plus and a PIN minus. So it is a Klein bottle with a Z4 bundle here. So great. So you basically take this and you think to yourself, okay, the object to consider is maybe to look for a Klein bottle that sits inside this Lens space and it's kind of over this S2. And then the question is, basically how to hook up the correct Z4 bundle, but that's not too difficult because of this argument over here. So then another way to kind of prove that this is the correct result is that there's another sequence of Smith homomorphisms that you can do, which basically takes the manifold kind of all the way down to a dimension one manifold by kind of taking Poincaré duals and another successive Poincaré dual. And what you see is that these one-dimensional manifolds are very, very constrained. They're basically just S1 with some non-bounding spin structure. So if you can show that the manifold that you had here, mapping along the proper Smith homomorphisms gives you the non-bounding circle, then you know you have your guy. And indeed, we did that, we checked it, and it works. So we have the manifold, and now it's just a question of writing the partition function. But anyways, the answer is zero, so I don't need to do that. And I think I'll just conclude the talk here.
Any further questions, Robert?
So at the end, when you use a Smith homomorphism, aren't you only like determining the manifold of the homomorphism?
But that's okay for the purposes of what we're trying to do.
Can you like explicitly say what a particular choice of manifold in this homomorphism class is?
Well, I mean, the generator is this thing.
Well, I guess I don't know. Is there a more explicit description of what this thing
is? Yeah, right. So this doesn't seem like very explicit because it just seems like I gave you a bunch of data. But actually what you can do is you can actually write down a handle body of this one. And we did that. And using the handle body decomposition of this, that's actually how you build the partition function. So it seems not explicit, but actually like you can get your hands on this type of manifold.
Does the manifold like
because the handle body is
projection on S3 or
no.
Any further questions? If not, let's think.
Sorry. I just have one more question about the testing procedure.
Yeah.
So I understand that H1 like kind of obstructs the lifting row to the non-coherent extension. But then you zest afterwards, how can I know that it's still obstructed by
H1? No. So first I extend to a bosonic theory.
Yeah.
And then in the extended bosonic theory, I ask, can it have a time reversal symmetry that works? The point is that doesn't always happen, so then you zest to get something that has a relevant thing. You don't look for time reversal symmetry first and then zest. You kind of extend first, zest, and then see if it works.
So H1 would actually be non-zero because the time reversal doesn't extend to zero.
Well, it doesn't extend to U1, it doesn't extend to U1 level 20, but it does extend to some other theory. And I didn't need the A tilde to be an actual modular extension. It could just be any unitary modular tensor category. It's nice to use modular extensions and work from those because those are kind of the minimal ones.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a good point.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, like you look for a minimal thing that works as a unitary modular tensor category, then you zest it.
Okay.
And then you see if it works. But it doesn't have to be literally the minimum modular extension that you work with to see if the symmetry
okay.
extends. You have a little bit more freedom because
okay.
it's really any unitary modular extension.
Nice.
Someone's still stuck in it.
It's a 3-hour meeting.
Damn, okay. Now I'm scared for my tenure. No, okay. Any other questions? Okay, if not, we're going to thank Matt again.